Hello and welcome to the cast with Dennis Mary. I'm your host, Dennis Mary Chidiberi, that's my full name. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Yuki, and also I record and run the Frontiers, which also owns the cast. So the cast is is a spin-off of the Frontiers podcast. In this part of the conversation, we speak to Web3 leaders and operators in the space, founders who are building the future of Web3 on the continent and the global south, to speak to them about what is happening in Web3, their experiences, their projections for the future, because Web3 as a technology is growing in Africa and around the world generally. So I think we don't have enough conversation about how this technology has been adopted in Africa, and the cast is an attempt to bring to life real-world use cases, conversations, problems, pain points from builders on the floor to make sure that their voices are heard across the globe, what they're doing, people hear about their products, and also understand the realities of Web3 on the continent as well of Africa. So today I have with me a very interesting friend of mine. It's that Sunday Steven. He's the CEO of Gonana and also the founder of Kuzu Consults. So Steven, would you care to introduce yourself before we jump into the episode proper?
Okay, yeah, my name is Steven Sunday. Like you rightly said, founder of Kuzu Consults, a blockchain consulting firm, and also founder of Gonana. Gonana is a Web3 commodity marketplace that connects farmers to customers, and also enabling settlements using crypto stables. And basically that's just brief about what I should say for now.
Interesting. I think down in the episode, we're talking about the Gonana and the use of stable coins for settlements for commodity market, because I think that's actually a very interesting use case for stable coins. And just stay tuned. We're definitely going to get to that part of the conversation. So I think it's something everybody listening in should actually anticipate to hear more about. Stable coins is revolutionizing payments for commodity traders in Africa. This is kind of a very huge underserved segment and niche of the intra-African trade and agriculture sector, definitely. So, Steven, I think it would be great for you to talk a little bit about yourself. I know you come from a very wealth of experience. You've been in this space longer than expected. Like, you've been here before I even came into the Web3 space. You've been here, right? So I think it will be very interesting for our guests to kind of like hear, for audience, sorry, to hear more about where you're coming from, and a little bit background, so I can ease us into the episode proper.
All right. I have been in the space since 2017, and have worked with a couple of blockchain companies or startups, as we would all call them. Or protocol, so whatever it is that suits you. So I worked with BitNation. I was the lead ambassador for BitNation in Africa. So I was leading the African ambassadors and then pushing for the adoption for BitNation. And I also worked with Eternity. Eternity, I was heading the team in West Africa. And also from Eternity, I moved to Algorand, where I was a technical ambassador, contributing most of the technical documents they have for developers, precisely because I was so curious about onboarding developers. And from there, then, of course, I was also contributing in the Polkadot ecosystem, where I specifically contributed to Moonbeam. So basically, that's like a rough rough view about my contribution. But with Algorand, I was able to start up a hub, developers hub, you know, that was strictly focused on training blockchain developers, you know, with specific interest in the Algorand ecosystem. We got funded to start up the hub and run the hub. And we're able to train over 60 developers within the span of 1 year. So basically, that's a little about what I have been doing in the space. But my interest precisely has always been around training blockchain developers. Why? Because this is an evolving technology that, in my opinion, is meant to liberate, in quote, Africa. And we don't really have a lot of the builders. So most of what Africa has been doing is to import the technology back home. And for me, it became a challenge, you know, and I told myself that I need to just get other people to develop and build solutions that will help solve practical grassroots use cases, you know. So that was just the reason why I chose the path of training blockchain developers. So basically, that's just an overview about my involvement in the space. So I've been around. Anyway, these are just the major guys I've contributed to. I've contributed to so many other projects like Riddick, Skycoin, you know, you can name them. Even the Polygon of now, you know, when they first of all started, were part of those guys that were pushing content, you know. And yeah, so basically that's just an overview about me and my involvement.
That's really interesting. So I think coming from a very rich background of helping projects in the Web3 space, build out the infrastructure they need to scale and get to developers. I think developer education is very important, and I'm very keen and happy that you're kind of like, it's something that you have interest in, because we have to train people that can build on this technology. If we don't have builders building or developers building, nobody's going to push that smart contract, right? So let's get to the episode proper. I think we're talking about the realities and hope for Web3 in Africa. So coming from where you're coming from, I think, I don't know if maybe you can, like, because one of the key things we're seeing is questions that have been asked about the relevance of Web3 in Africa. Like, is this technology actually important? Like, what is it actually for? Like, who is even using this thing entirely? Like, you know, we have this experience where we have, like you mentioned, like commodity farmers are trying to receive payments, and also for their goods and services that they're exporting outside of the continent and stuff like that. So I just would love that you kind of dive deep into like what you feel about the relevancy for Web3 across the spectrum in Africa, because I think if this technology is relevant for folks, then adoption is actually going to be the next thing that follows, and then regulatory clarity and mainstream adoption is kind of what we are aiming for. But most people don't understand how relevant this technology is, and I think it's something, if you care to kind of comment about it.
Okay, yeah. So the Web3 adoption is an ongoing conversation, I think, and it will not stop because of its relevance to the entire continent of Africa. So in my honest opinion, right, I think so far, you know, when you moving from the smart contract era to just making blockchain dApps more user friendly, or rather moving from the seed phrase and private key era to now just using a click of buttons to connect to a particular blockchain protocol has been the most innovative tech that I've seen, you know, coming out of the blockchain space. And so I became very excited with the entire concept of Web3, being that it's now going to help a lot of people understand what blockchain is to a large extent, even though the concept of Web3 is to hide the technology behind the solution, right? But I think it's a catalyst for adoption greatly. Looking at the fact that a lot of solutions right now are more beginning to become more user-friendly. So little wonder you find authentication solutions that are Web3 enabled, just so that they can help onboard more users. And then you can find a lot of the solutions right now are beginning to help the user manage things like private keys, seed phrases, and all of that. So I see adoption paving way in itself, you know, with the way the whole technology is remodeling and becoming more user friendly. Probably that's one of the reasons why we decided to build the solution we're building, because for us adoption is very key. And like I told you, I decided to take the path of building, or rather training developers, so that we'll be able to tackle most of these grassroots issues that we're having, you know, by ourselves. So build a solution by yourself, put all the features that you want, and then run with it and see it, watch it scale. So for us, you know, if you put into perspective, commodity, or rather farmers in general, you'll discover that when it comes to digital inclusion, they are the least thought of. Like, nobody cares about them. Meanwhile, they are the bedrock of the society. I'm being code anyway. So for us, you know, it's I believe that we still have quite a lot to do anyway in terms of adoption.
Definitely.
But I think the technology is really becoming a lot more easier to use. The technology is becoming a lot more user-friendly. So when you look at dApps that are developed right now, you want to also look at the UI, and then you'll see that the UI is actually very perfect. You know, they are not those complex UIs that you need to copy something from here to add to hit there. We are growing in a rapid stage, I mean, in terms of technological evolution. And nobody has that time anymore, you know. So people would want to see it moving very fast. And that is the reason why you now see a lot of these solutions, Web3 solutions, integrating AI features, just because, you know, people are no longer having time to waste. People are trying to be as fast as they can, you know. But the initial Web3 idea was a slow kind of, you know. So, the initial blockchain idea, now that is transitioning to Web3, everything is beginning to look a lot more faster. So I see light at the end of the tunnel, especially when you talk about adoption in Africa. It's becoming more user-friendly. It's becoming more easy. People are beginning to get more informed.
That's actually a very interesting insight, because I think it leads the premise of like the private key usability issue. Because I think with FTX, when FTX struck, it was clear to us that everybody has to kind of like take charge. And I think, you know, a crisis, you know, the Second World War led to the formation of the UN. And since then, the UN led to the formation of globalization, which actually helped decrease the possibilities of war. Because I think the FTX issue was kind of like a Second World War moment for crypto, right? Because it led us to ask ourselves the conversations of like, are we going to continue to wallow in ignorance and build with the idea that is mathematically correct, and everything we do here is kind of like we are not supposed to like be regulated or anything or something like that. So I think not just about the regulatory part of the conversation, the UX part, like, is script really being adopted in the right manner and angle? Because I think from what you said, right, I think the private key abstraction, because I normally say this to people since this year, crypto, like, nobody cares. And nobody really, really, like, cares. But people are not talking about it. But crypto, but under the hood, crypto UX is completely being rebuilt from bottom up. Like,
absolutely.
The crypto
absolutely.
Experience is being rebuilt entirely. Like, the next 2-3 years is going to be really massive, right? Because...
yeah, true.
I was having this discussion with a friend. So, we were discussing about the cloud engineering, cloud computing, the growth of cloud computing in the world, how cloud computing came out and became like a domineering team, and how now almost everybody, because when cloud came out, everyone was like, cloud computing, AWS, whoa. Now, everybody is deploying on the cloud without not knowing that deploying on the cloud. So cloud has become literally invincible, right? Like, it's no longer like a conversation. It's now something that is left to developers. Like, definitely, right? So people, every day people are using the cloud, because anytime you use WhatsApp, anytime, even this recording we're doing right now, it's made possible because there is a cloud computing technology that was developed. So now the technology has become almost invincible, that it now powers almost every aspect of the internet, right? And we are using it, and we're not being bored by the whole experience that comes with the technicalities of using the cloud to run your business or something like that. So I think for me, right, that is where I see crypto going. And that is where I see what the likes of Gonana is actually doing, because you're kind of like abstracting away the nomenclature of Web3. And actually, you know, some people come out and say, we are building a Web3, or we are building a crypto marketplace for farmers to come and trade and sell their commodities. Somebody, another person will come out and say, we are building a commodity marketplace. It's simple. They are not saying anything again. Yeah. That's the only thing they're saying. And then you ask them, okay, nice. What are the benefits of this commodity market? Like, yeah, people can accept payments. We make it easy for them to be able to use their, accept payments in crypto, and also accept payments in stable coins and the rest of that. You're not just talking about crypto. You're talking about the problem that you're solving. I think that is where we're heading to in this space. And I think that is actually a very interesting, practical, like, experience of what this technology does for the continent, does for, like, I like the way you called out farmers being underserved. Funny enough, you see what is happening in the Ukraine, you see how the world is getting messed up every day, like, grain is not flowing out, and you definitely know that farmers are very important. And I think I so much believe, because the first time we spoke about, you told me what I did in Gonana, I went to talk about it with my team. Everybody was like, this is actually sick, right? It's actually mad.
Let me be honest with you, right? Let me just be honest with you. So in terms of looking at Gonana, right? Probably maybe I'm jumping the gun right now, but let
me just... No, you're not. Right? You're not, definitely.
So when I got into the space newly, like, everybody was building Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then at that point,
they are still doing as well. So
yeah, so like at that point, I think BitFXT was the biggest crypto exchange in Africa, run by Franklin Peters, right? And Franklin was like one of my very good guy. He's still my very, very good guy, you know. So for me, you know, I was inspired by most of my guys building exchanges. Like, everybody just wants to be exchange. Everybody just wants to have the biggest thing.
Everybody wants to do trade.
Then it became a payment thing as well. So for me, right, a remittance and all of that. So for me, I said, okay, we can't all be building the same thing. Like, can somebody just focus on something else? Then a lot of people haven't even looked at healthcare. But right now, if you look at the African space, you find quite a lot of people solving healthcare, you know. So I felt, okay, what can I do that won't be a copy and paste thing around the Web3 space or whatever it is? Because if you look at most of the solutions, they were tailored into towards the same thing. Yeah, the space is quite big. We have over 200 million. So there can be 10 million per every solution or 1 million per every solution, you know. But then can we also serve other people? So I thought, I used to be a farmer. So I had this experience of
that's interesting. You used to be a farmer. That's actually nice.
Yeah, okay. Sure. I used to be a farmer. I had to let go of farming because of the farmer's headers, the issue. And at some point, my farm was destroyed. Like everything I had invested in that farm was destroyed. Wow. Yeah. And I couldn't make a penny out of what I'd invested. Anyway, that's story for another day. So, you know, then I understand the hurdle that these farmers used to, you know, go through with middlemen. Sometimes these middlemen come to the farm and pick up these goods and then don't come back until maybe after a month, you know. And this farmer is supposed to get paid for his produce. So, in worst case scenario, you should come back and pay him in 1 week. You know, if you can pay him in 3 days, right? You should pay him in 1 week. So so these were some of the things that I saw these farmers go through. Apart from delayed payment, sometimes they are being undervalued. So you come to the farm, you buy produce for probably maybe 50 naira, and then you go to sell it for 250 naira, right? And you're making about, say, maybe 120 naira as profit. Now, the 50 naira you paid this farmer is supposed to be for his produce, for his wage, for whatever investment he has done, right, in the farm. So at the end of the day, you, who is the middleman, made 120 naira. And this farmer is probably making 30 naira or 20 in worst case scenario, right? So I felt that's really very sad. And how do I use technology with my background in computer science? How do I use technology to solve this issue? And since I'm actively involved in the blockchain and cryptocurrency space, and looking at the fact that the local economy was crashing by the day, how can I help these farmers hedge, you know, their funds, you know, and all of that? So that I started brainstorming in 2018. That was when the idea started coming to life. I went into a hackathon with it, you know, turned out to be the second place, you know, and all of that. And so I said, okay, that means there's something I'm solving that is genuinely needed, you know? So we started building, and then we didn't really understand the implementation, because like I said, blockchain was really quite complex. And how do you begin to go and explain seed phrase of that?
A farmer.
So we decided to take a pause. And in 2021, we came back to continue building. So for me, right, I just see that there are quite a lot of use cases. Today, if I'm not working on GoNana, there are a whole lot. If I'm not working on GoNana, I would probably look for something different to address rather than just payment and all of that, because we need quite a lot of these grassroots solutions. You would bear me witness that away from the banks, people use other solutions, other tech solutions to solve day-to-day needs, right? You know, so why can't we have other people looking at that aspect and solving those? So
we're talking about the importance of, because you mentioned about how... you mentioned how Web3 is actually changing, like how you started building a commodity marketplace for farmers, and how Web3 makes it easy for these farmers, like how people should actually focus on solving real world problems that is just apart from payments or trading or something like that, or trading of cryptocurrencies and stuff like that. So I think I was kind of like looking at the whole African ecosystem generally, and one of the key things I've seen is that there is still like a very big attention being paid to other non-critical use cases like farmers' payments, as you mentioned, because I think it's a very big conversation about what farmers are going through in Africa and how cryptocurrency can actually help them. I think that opens up a whole lot of a different industry entirely on its own generally. Like in my head, I can't just keep thinking, I can't finish thinking about it, right? So, but I want to like get like, what's the trade like within farmers in Nigeria? Is it, many of them, are they trading amongst themselves or are they just trading among people outside of Nigeria?
Okay, so I will tell you for a fact that there are quite a lot of trading within Nigeria, which the demand is not saturated yet. There are quite a lot of shortfall in terms of supply. So, and then okay. Also there are a couple of other export, you know, commodities that are being exported out of the country, which is still also the demand is not saturated yet. But largely, what is happening is in Africa generally, right? Largely, what's happening is there is in-country consumption rather than export. Okay, in terms of there are still commodity traders that would still want to export. So you and I would attest to the fact that if I have a business or if we have a business right now, would prefer to do exports rather than local consumption. Why? Because the turnover, return on investment is really very massive. Do you agree with me? Because the purchasing power of the local currency has really dropped. Okay.
Yeah.
And because it has really dropped, the exchange for value is not so significant as such. So a lot of these commodity traders would still prefer to do export. So one of the partners we're working with, which is DHL, we got some data from them that were quite scary, quite amazing.
DHL, the logistic company?
DHL Logistics. So, yeah. Wow. So, So, it's been, so how do we mitigate this gap? How do we close up this gap? How do we do this? How do we do that? You know, how do we fit into this particular business opportunity? You know, how do we build, how do we model our business to fit into what this gap that are existing? So for us, right, we've tried to see how we can look. First of all, like, you know, we're launching local before we can even scale out. And I will tell you for a fact that with the challenges that are abound, even the local market cannot really be saturated. I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say, but when you now look at a farmer, if you now look at the business opportunity and then you still want to do export, why not? We can't stop you. So for instance, we are fully aware that a commodity like cassava, you know, in France sells, so maybe one ton of cassava in Nigeria can be maybe 100,000 naira. And then one ton of cassava in France might be over 50,000 euros. So if I have that kind of business opportunity, I would rather want to do export. I don't know if you understand.
Definitely.
So
yeah, I get
you know, we're just trying to see how do we close up the gap? How do we help these farmers? At the end of the day, our biggest and major concern is to be able to reward the farmer for the hard work they are doing. Right.
That is why they are farming.
Like I gave the analysis earlier. that these middlemen make this farmer. So you find people who have been farming for, if you count the richest people in Nigeria, right, you can't find farmers. But food is consumed every day in the country, right? And but when you want to now count rich people, you discover that they are doing one middleman. They are acting as a middleman in one industry or the other, and especially in the commodity space, those guys are really very rich. Where do they get the money from? From the hard work of those commodity traders. So we're not fighting these guys. We're only saying that, okay, farmers, we have a better solution. So instead of you waiting on these guys to come pick your product and then blah, 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 you can connect directly to somebody who is willing to buy, whether in-country or outbound. So if you are doing inbound, of course, you are at leverage to do that. If you are doing outbound, you are at leverage to do that. There are certain criteria that you have to meet, definitely. But for us, the farmer is the number one concern. We want to see how do we help this farmer retain back at least 70% of the profit that he would always lose to the middleman. That is why we are now transferring costs to whoever is buying the product. So cost of logistics, you pay for it, just like any other item you buy, right? If you're buying an item right now from Jumia, pay for cost of logistics.
True.
The person who produces, who has the product, doesn't know how you get it, okay? But Jumia ensures that you pay for logistics and then you have these products delivered. Why can't we transfer the same thing with these farmers? Why can't we do the same thing on commodities generally? So that's the kind of model we're just trying to give. So it's like, look at Gonana as an Amazon for farmers or commodity traders. Okay.
That's really powerful, right? Right. Because I just believe that no matter how anybody wants to talk about it, even before I came on this podcast, I eat, right? So like I eat food and it's just like crazy, like how much value is on this space. I don't even know, like according to the Nigerian Stock Exchange, right? The agricultural sector on the Nigerian Stock Exchange is worth almost 1 trillion naira. Like one trillion naira. So like the agricultural market in Nigeria alone is almost $39 billion.
Yeah.
Dollars. And it's growing at a compound annual rate of almost 14.45%. Year on year since 2016. So, like, agriculture is a very big part of the conversation. And it's really going to be interesting. And I think it's one of the hopes of how Web3 can play a very pivotal role in value exchange in this space. Because whether we like to believe it or not, I think Gonana is solving a very key problem. Like, important problem. Because we have to eat, right? We all have to eat, definitely. So
yeah, sure.
I think as I said earlier on, like we can't just unpack the impact of what you guys are doing. Like the impact to me is kind of like very, very massive. But that kind of brings me to like the part where, because doing something like Gonana is kind of very crazy, right? You have a lot of moving parts. I've had opportunities to consult for some companies that are in the logistics space. I know that one of the biggest challenges, I don't know, probably is infrastructure. How do you get to move? Because Africa is kind of not connected very well. And even within Nigeria here, we have a security problem and the rest of that. So like, how are you guys solving some of the infrastructure challenges for farmers? Like how you guys are connecting these farmers and making sure that the middleman has been eliminated very well? And also, like, is there any regulatory ish that you guys are facing? Like, how you guys solved it over time? to make sure that farmers in Africa like have like very easy access to sell their goods and services to the end users without not having to pass through a middleman that would definitely collect like 70% of their profits from them.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Okay, I think I lost the question, but because it was
I was asking how you guys help, like how you guys solve the infrastructure, like how you like infrastructure problem, like logistics and stuff, like how you guys solving that concern for farmers across board, because we know how transportation and moving things around can be, like generally it's a very tedious process anywhere in the world, but how you guys kind of like solving it for farmers in Nigeria?
Okay, yeah, so this is a very good question. So like I told you, we have partners that are like global brand. Okay, so like I told you, we are using DHL as part of our DHL logistics as part of our supply chain company. We're also using GIG Logistics and also Shipbubble, and these guys have their game sorted out in a way. So in terms of having to deal with logistics or moving these produce from the moving these commodities from the farmer's point of sale to the consumer's point of delivery has been like, it's not a problem for them because this is what they've been doing for years and they've had everything sorted out. So for us, we only worry about connecting these farmers to who is buying. Okay, so our biggest worry and challenge is on the side of helping them to sell rather than helping them to worry about how the produce gets to their customers. I don't know if you understand what I've just said.
We're also open to
working with partners. So in terms of we can't deny the fact that there will be challenges. Do you understand? But for now, we solve them as they come, right?
Definitely.
So also in terms of regulation, we haven't really had any sort of challenge for now, because our legal and compliance officer has really helped to position us in a way that we are kind of okay to run for now. Okay, because you know regulations come in every now and then. And then tomorrow we can just wake up to somebody saying, no, don't do this, don't do that, operate in this manner or don't operate in that manner. So it's not really been a challenge in terms of regulation. Even when we decided to make our products, rather our solution Web3-based, you know, we were so excited when the immediate past Minister for Communications and Digital Economy gave a pass on blockchain and its other components. You know, what are the components? It means cryptocurrency and the rest. We know that there's still this embargo on cryptocurrency related activities with traditional banks. But yeah. I will tell you, solutions like Yuki has just come in handy, you know, just to see how most of these things we can be able to have like seamless integration, seamless deployment of some of the features that we want. So apparently the space is growing, like I mentioned earlier. So in terms of regulation, it might not really be a problem for now. You know, moving forward, probably maybe we might face some challenges. But for now, we are good. And then,
yeah, sure.
Like I said, infrastructure. You can't deny the fact that.
Yeah, I think
infrastructure problem.
I think. Yeah,
go on.
I think. Yeah, I think. The biggest challenge we have in crypto right now is not really like in Web3. As you mentioned, the regulatory will come up as it comes, we solve it, right? It's not just something that we kind of like drawn head into, start cleaning ourselves over. And I think I like your approach, connect with partners to solve the infrastructure challenges, then build a team around to solve the legal, the frameworks and the compliance issues that is in this space as well. So one of the things I would normally say is that cryptocurrency or Web3 in Nigeria is operating in its true form. What I mean by that is that you have a decentralized on an off-ramp layer powering, moving in and out of crypto. That is actually very powerful. And that is where you talk about censorship resistant. And this is not really part of the conversation, but I just want to like comment on it. When you talk about censorship resistant infrastructures, I think crypto in Nigeria is operating at an optimal censorship resistant level where over time it becomes so hard to actually track what is going on for people trying to gather data and the rest of that, because everything is kind of being done informally. And I think that is very powerful to actually for the advancement of the technology. But at the end of the day, consumer protection is also very important. That can be done on the custody layer as well, not on kind of like on the on and off ramp. Yeah, that is actually a notable mention. I just wanted to comment that out as well. So I think we kind of try to round up right now to kind of because we've had very important conversations about Gonana and the issues farmers in Africa are having, the potentials of this technology, and then also the opportunities that people are missing out in solving real world problems for real people with pain points on the continent. So I just want to like maybe bring it back to you, like, what are your visions and the future for the future? Like, what do you see Web3 becoming in Africa? And you can top it off also by like, what is the next thing that we should expect from Gonana? Like, what is the future going to be like for Web3 and for Gonana and for the farmers on the continent? Like, what does it actually look like? Because you are building at the intersection of Web3 farmers and the intersection of Web3 farmers as well. So like, what is the future going to be like for these two partners and people you are building for generally?
Okay. Thank you for this question. I feel it's very interesting to talk about the future of Web3 for Africa, because when you look at the continent, right? And when you look at all the challenges that we are going through, for instance, you want to talk about the challenges of devaluation and all of that. Now, Web3 is coming to say, no, you don't necessarily have to make or keep your funds in your local currency. You could hedge your funds against is crypto stable. And you are sure when you're... So, for instance, let me just give you a very practical example. People who held Naira in September, from September 1st to September 30th, must have lost almost 10 to 13% of the value of their money, okay? And this is a fact that the purchasing power keeps dropping by the day. So if we had if we had a solution where these grassroots people will keep their funds or hedge their funds against their local against their dying local currency, and I think it's going to really help. The biggest hype about Web3 in Nigeria precisely started when the CBN banned cryptocurrency.
That was in 2020, right? If I'm not mistaken.
2020, yes. that was the time where Dogecoin became the household name in the country. Everybody on the street knew about Dogecoin.
Hear about crypto.
Yes. So why? Because, you know, people were trying to find what is this thing about crypto and the CBN and the government. The government doesn't want us to be liberated, blah, blah, blah. So a lot of noise started, you know, on the streets. And actually, if you look at, people were just very tired, you know. So I wish people understood why they needed to be on crypto at that point. So imagine if half of the people who knew crypto then hedged their funds against the Naira. You know, 3 years from now, you would have made like almost 150% of what you had. You know,
that's really crazy.
So for me, right? It's I see Web3 actually paving way in Africa too, because it's actually the technology for the future. But only if we're able to address it properly. So what I mean by addressing it properly is going just beyond payments, right? Can we solve other real-world situations with it? I didn't tell you this at the start of this conversation, but myself and some few other guys from University of Jos hosted the first blockchain election in Africa in 2020, the year, yes. We held at the University of Jos. We held that. We built a dApp deployed on the Ethereum protocol called Univote. And that dApp was used to host the first blockchain election in the entire continent. Okay? This is not us dropping data. No, it was the whole process. People had wallet addresses to against their votes. So if you sign up, you have a wallet address, you know, and then we funded the wallet address and people use that, you know, we had a sponsored contract. So people use that to do the voting, right?
Wow.
So now you see the reason why I told you that. For me, it hasn't always been going through the normal route. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
First, I wanted to start with election, but the complexity around Africa and then elections in general, you know, we went for a hackathon, and I won't mention the name, but one of the government agencies told us clearly that this is not a solution for Nigeria now. Okay, we actually won the hackathon, but because of the sentiment, and then of course they needed to take a report and all of that, and nobody wanted to be pinned to the fact that they are proposing a blockchain election for the country, so we were denied our first place, you know. But then for me, and then I think people around me, it's been, can we solve other things, other use cases? Can we use blockchain apart from payments? Can we just do something different? Can we solve real world?
Interesting.
Situations?
Yeah.
Imagine if we had the past elections on the blockchain. You know what the story would have been. I don't have to say much about it.
Probably we'll have a different president. We have a different president right now. I see.
Yeah, all of that.
The future is crazy, definitely.
So for me, I see that Web3 and its components will actually help to take Africa to a different level, if only it is deployed to the grassroots, right? And for Gonana, I see Gonana as a brainchild for what we are going to evolve in eventually, right? But maybe going beyond just commodity, solving some other use cases. Our vision for Gonana is to be a one-stop shop, right, to solving grassroots problem, So commodity marketplace might just be one aspect of so many things. Okay. And so I see, I am quite very optimistic about the future of Gonana.
The future.
Yes.
I am too, right? I would definitely say
in blossom.
Yeah, sure. I think it's a very unique solution, right? And anybody listening will definitely know that the conversation has been very nice, and what you're doing is kind of very crazy, definitely. Like, that is what I can use to describe it.
Thank you very much.
It's kind of like solving a problem that nobody wants to pay attention to, because it's very hard to ignore the noise and focus on the real thing. And I think it's only people that actually knows value and actually see a problem, understands a problem, that can actually, take that stand to solve these kind of key fundamental issues and the rest of that. So, man, I swear, I'm just pumped that you're here.
I just put them as a way of just probably rounding up from me? Okay, so I will tell you, you've just said some things that got me thinking, right? So I will tell you for a fact that since when we've been building, like from the very first time we said, okay, let's approach some communities and access development grants and all of that. For the fact that we're building a commodity marketplace was like a kind of turnoff for most of these guys. And I don't know why. Because so the entire ecosystem is just looking at payment. And everybody wants payment. So at the end of the day, right, if you try to move away from, and that's the main reason why we decided to bootstrap to the point we are at the moment. Because we've noticed that, it seems we're the only guys that believe that this should be a solution for now, right? And so because we believe that it should be a solution for now, let's push it to the latter and see where we get ourselves to, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah, and most of those guys that we've done, you know, we've been on calls with them, it is a fact that it's something that nobody is working on within the blockchain and Web3 space. But for some kind of selfish reasons, they really don't want to pay attention to that for now. So I don't really understand why nobody is paying attention to this important, like we rightly agreed, this important sector of the economy. You can't shy away from the fact that the commodity space is really very important.
You can't do without eating. Like, it's all clear, right? Like, commodity is all about food, right? So like, you know, it's kind of like a very weird conversation to be having, that somebody is not paying attention to what they have to eat. Because I had the conversation with one Indian entrepreneur. He was talking about how he brought in pineapple from Africa to France and some other countries can actually help reduce. Can't remember what he mentioned, but he mentioned some little important stats there as well. So, bro, like, to be honest, to be very clear, I think Gonana is having a very clear problem. And I think you guys should check them out and see what they have to offer. So, like, partnerships, investors, and Web3 guys in the space. If you want to connect with Sunday, like, where is the quickest place for people to get, you know, about, connect with you, maybe send you hi or message or something like that?
Okay, I would have said an email, but then quickly, if you can connect to me with me on Telegram, that will be good. The Telegram handle is at Kusus TV. So it's KUSU. STVIE.
Yeah.
KUSU STVIE. And then, or maybe shoot us an email at the email is contact@gonana.farm. Contact is CONTACT at gonana.farm. Gonana is G-O-N-A-N-A, then .farm. Yeah, so these are the two quickest way to get me.
Sure, man. Yeah, we're going to include all those things in the show notes as well. And okay, if anybody wants to contact you, can go to the show notes. You're going to see the links to the website and then also to the Telegram you mentioned, then their Twitter page, LinkedIn and stuff like that. So
yeah, sure.
I'm really happy that we're able to get to this part of the conversation, because I think we've already talked about recording this, talking about Gonana, recording this podcast and putting it out there. So I'm just happy we did this, and I believe our listeners and also our guests is also happy to be here with us as well. So I really thank you for the opportunity to share your Gonana story and also how you're feeding Africa generally. That's how I'm going to describe it. Gonana is basically going to feed Africa, definitely. So I would say stay tuned. I look forward to that, man. So I think it's been a nice run. It's been a nice story. And we're looking out to have you back on the show again to maybe a couple of months time and thereabouts to talk about what has happened over the period of this time and the future, what the future has been. And I think I would like to thank my team for making this possible, my production people and all the people, good people at Yuki Frontiers, for putting this together. I'm not the only person here. We have a lot of folks working on the background to make sure that this show comes straight to you guys on Spotify, YouTube, Apple platform. We're going off Google very soon because Google is taking down Google Podcast. So we're going to be moving all our podcasts from Google to YouTube. So just take note of that as well. We'll be withdrawing from Google platforms very soon. So you can get the Frontiers on the Apple show, on the Apple Podcast platform, and also the Spotify platform. It's just because this is a new show that we're adding to the Frontiers Podcast Network. So you're going to see the cast there on the Frontiers website. Remember, the Frontiers is brought to you by, hosted by Dennis Merry, the CEO and founder of Yuki. We are building the future of Web3 in Africa. From me to you, from my guests and to all our listeners, thank you and have a very wonderful day. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are listening in. Cheers, everybody. Thank you.